You want to be a good neighbor, and you're pretty sure that means loving your neighbor. But how? The first step to loving your neighbor is to know your neighbor. A quick demographic search yields graphs and charts and data that quickly become overwhelming. But behind every statistic, every bar graph, every number, there are very real people whose lives are full of needs, longings, and dreams. This four-week series will explore how we can live out our values of being curious, creative, and compassionate when we ask, "Who is my neighbor?"
What do you know about your immediate neighbors? I'm talking about the people that live on each side of you. To one side of me, there's an older couple who are newly retired and they have older adult children who live with them. To the other side of me is a single man who has a girlfriend that shows up from time to time. And, well, I haven't talked to him too much except over the fence about his dog. Across the street from me is a young couple who has two kids, maybe under the age of five, and my kids play with them quite a bit. Now, I know the names of all of those people. I'm not saying I'm on screen just so that, well, protect their privacy. So it's one thing to know the basic makeup of who your neighbors are, like they're retired, they have kids, they've got a girlfriend, they've got a dog. But it's a whole other thing to know something about them spiritually. Today, we're looking at the spiritual perspective of some of our neighbors. And some of our neighbors have this spiritual perspective. The spiritual truth is buried beneath an avalanche of religious hypocrisy. Others see their religious perspective as God, family, and country. Or religious practices cherish our past and can empower my future. Or other neighbors might have this religious perspective, that they're looking for heroes of faith. Or to always take time to smell the roses and appreciate what you have. Today, we're taking a look at my unique neighbors, the unique neighbors at each of our campuses. Now you may wonder, how do we know about these people? How do we know about our neighbors? Well, you all make purchases every day. You make purchases with your credit cards, you pay your bills, and the credit reporting companies like Experian track that, and the demographers at those companies split the United States population into 72 distinct subgroups. They further split those 72 groups into family groups. And they label them, well, 1 through 72, and then A through S. Those who are the A group are the highest socioeconomic class in our culture. Those who are the S group are the lowest. Thomas Bandy, a Canadian theologian, demographer, speaker, author, has then taken those groups and written religious profiles for each and every one of them. Now, you can look at the basic demographics of our neighbors right around us, things like age, population, generations, and so on. But what's really interesting is to look at the psychographics. Psychographics are lifestyles, attitudes, opinions, the way people live their lives, and the way that they are motivated. There are some demographic groups that are common to all of our campuses. They're neighbors of, well, the Eastwood campus, the South Lansing campus, and at Potterville. One of those big groups is the O family group, singles and starters. And Thomas Bandy says that their religious perspective is that they are looking for heroes of the faith. They make up about 13% of the population found in a 30-minute drive from our capital. That's a total of just over 57,000 singles and starters. Another group that is common to all of our campuses are the Rooted Flower Power. The Rooted Flower Power's religious perspective, according to Tom Bandy, is always take time to smell the roses and appreciate what you have. They make up about 4% of the population of a 30-minute drive around our capital, or about 17,000 Rooted Flower Power. All right, those are the groups that are common to all of our campuses, but what we really want to focus on today are the groups that are unique to each of our campuses, our unique neighbors. And around our Eastwood campus, one of the unique groups are ambitious solos. They're labeled G24. Their religious perspective is that spiritual truth is buried beneath a mountain of hypocrisy. They make up about 1% of the population of a 30-minute drive around our capital, or about 5,000. There's about 5,000 ambitious singles in our region. At the South Lansing campus, our unique neighbors are the Growing and Expanding Group, or M45. And their religious perspective is God, family, and country. They make up about 2.6% of the population in a 30-minute drive from the Capitol, which is just a little over 11,000 growing and expanding neighbors. At our Potterville campus, and actually in the entire rural area surrounding the Lansing region, our unique neighbors are the I-30, Potlucks, and Great Outdoors. According to Tom Bandy, their religious preference is, "Religious practices cherish our past and can empower my future." They make up about 3% of a 30-minute drive from the Lansing region, or about 14,000 of these neighbors. Now, usually when we talk about our core values here at Sycamore Creek, we're curious, creative, and compassionate. But throughout this whole series, we've been curious, compassionate, and creative. We want to be curious about who is my unique neighbor and who has God called us to reach. We want to be compassionate to know what our neighbors' needs are beyond just the basics of food and shelter. And we want to be creative about how we meet my neighbors' needs and how do we invite them into the mission of Sycamore Creek. There is one key assumption that we've had through this whole series, and that is that we can't reach everyone. I think if there's any message in this series that will make the reasons for that really plain, it's this one. As we look at the different preferences of each of our unique neighbors. But before we get there, we have a chat question for you. So turn to your neighbor or write in the chat the answer to this question. From what you know at this point about our three campuses, what is similar and what is unique about each campus's neighbors? All right, let's take a deep dive into each one of these unique neighbors at each of our campuses. And let's start with this campus, the Eastwood campus, the G24 Ambitious Singles. Let's remember that the religious perspective of the Ambitious Singles is that spiritual truth is buried beneath a mountain of hypocrisy. Their spiritual issues are feeling angry and neglected, or having anxieties over fate and abuse. If they are in church, their common church presence is that they have an eccentric spirituality, they're alienated from organized religion, they're active in liberal social causes, they're focused on material success, they value secular nonprofits, and they pursue personal fulfillment. Church people are usually considered, well, boring and unsophisticated to this group. And if they are involved with church, they'll expect the church to respect diversity and to model physical and mental health in their leaders and in the community. I've been having fun with AI through this whole series and plugging all this data into ChatGPT and asking it to write profiles of these groups and skits. And so here's, it's a little bit of a wooden AI skit, but it gets the job done for introducing us to who these folks are. All right, imagine three 20-year-olds, Lila, Jason, and Nate, and they're sitting in a fancy coffee shop drinking artisanal coffee. And here's the conversation they have. So I heard you guys went to that new immersive art exhibit last weekend. How was it? Oh, it was mind-blowing. Seriously, it felt like stepping into another dimension. Yeah, the way they combined technology and traditional art forms was genius. Wow, I'm bummed I missed it. But speaking of immersive experiences, have either of you ever considered exploring spirituality in unconventional ways? Like what? Well, not necessarily through organized religion, but maybe through something more. I don't know, maybe something eclectic? You mean like meditation or yoga? Yeah, or maybe even attending one of those alternative spiritual gatherings. I've been feeling this pull toward exploring my inner self lately, but I'm not sure where to start. I get what you mean. Sometimes I feel like there's this whole realm of spiritual truth buried beneath all the religious dogma and hypocrisy. I completely agree. It's like I want to connect with something bigger than myself, But I don't want to be bogged down by all the rules and traditions of organized religion. Exactly. I mean, don't get me wrong, I respect people's beliefs, but I just don't feel like traditional churches resonate with me. Yeah, I feel you. I'd rather spend my Sunday mornings hiking in nature or volunteering for a cause I believe in than sitting in a stuffy church pew. Same here. But hey, maybe we should look into some of those alternative spiritual gatherings together. It could be a cool way to explore our spirituality without feeling judged or pressured. That sounds like a plan, and who knows, maybe we'll discover a whole new perspective on faith and spirituality that resonates with us. They clink their coffee cups together in agreement, ready to embark on their journey of spiritual exploration. Okay, so maybe that's a little wooden and sounds a little bit like AI, but it does the job of introducing you to these folks. Let's take a look now at another group, a group that's around our South Lansing campus. Again, they are the M45, or Growing and Expanding. They make up about 2.6% of the population of a 30-minute drive from the Capitol, or just over 11,000 growing and expanding neighbors. Their religious perspective is God, country, and family. Their spiritual issues, according to Tom Bandy, are feelings of estrangement, anxieties about emptiness, and displacement. And when they are at church, their common church presence is that they are church shoppers. Good churches adapt to their lifestyle. Common sense and ordinary language are valued. Everyday faith is important to them. They seek family-centered opportunities, and they look for online communities. They identify themselves as Christian, and they will chop around to find a church that meets their needs, that welcomes them as they are, that has family-centered activities, and, well, it helps them find some sanity in the midst of their hectic life. Again, I plugged this group's data into ChatGPT and asked it to write me a 3-person script so that we could get to know these people. So here's again, it's a little bit wooden, but it gets the point across. Imagine 3 30-somethings sitting in a living room, one at a couch, and the other 2 walk in. Maria says, "Hey, Jack and Sarah, come on in and take a seat." Jack says, "Thanks, Maria. We've been hunting for a church that fits our lives." Sarah, joining them, says, "Yeah, it's been a struggle finding one that suits our busy schedules." "I totally get it. The church I go to is all about adapting to your lifestyle. They're big on family, making faith practical for everyday life. That sounds like what we need. We're always on the go with work and the kids." "Exactly. They've got family-friendly services, online communities for when you can't make it in person, and tons of support for parents like us." "That's exactly what I've been looking for." "Plus, they're not about fitting into a mold. They understand the challenges we face and help us grow without pressure." "It sounds perfect. What about activities outside of Sundays?" "Plenty. Workshops, picnics, sports. There's something for everyone. And they're big on staying connected, even if you can't make it to church." "I like the sound of that." "Then you'll love it there. Why not join me this Sunday? You can see for yourselves. That sounds like a plan. Count me in too." "Great. See you both on Sunday. You're going to love it." Let's do the same thing with our Potterville unique neighbors. That is the Potlucks and Great Outdoors. Now remember, Tom Bandy says their religious preference is this: that religious practices cherish our past and can empower my future. Remember, they make up about 3% of our region, or there are 14,000 of these unique neighbors, especially here at our Potterville campus. Our Potlucks and Great Outdoors neighbors have these spiritual issues. They're feeling flawed and neglected, and they have anxieties over meaninglessness and estrangement. When they are in church, some of their common church presence is that they like church tradition. They like smaller congregations. Fellowship and friendship are important to them. They look for family values. They like Christian year celebrations, and they are independent-minded. These unique neighbors often consider church their most essential peer group, where they find support. Their roots go deep, really deep, into their rural communities, and also their loyalty to their church. The church reinforces their values, provides them a center for social activities beyond the home. They may treat the church as extended family. So I plugged all that data into ChatGPT, asked it to give me a 3-person skit, and here it is. Imagine 3 40-somethings, and they're sitting in a living room, having a conversation. It's cozy, warm, and relaxed. Jill says, "You know, our church has been such a rock for our family. It's like having an extended family right there." Mike responds, "Absolutely. I don't know where we'd be without the support of our church community, especially during those tough times." Susan chimes in, "I envy that. I've been feeling a bit disconnected from my faith lately. I miss having that sense of belonging. Have you thought about getting involved in a church community again?" "I have, but I'm not sure where to start. Everything seems so different now." "Well, faith isn't about having all the answers. It's about finding comfort and strength in community, in those shared experiences. And you never know. You might find exactly what you're looking for in a new church community. It could be just the thing to reignite that spark." "You're right. I think it's time I take that step and explore my options. Thanks, guys." All right, once again, ChatGPT isn't winning any awards for these scripts, but it gets the point across. Here's a chat question for you now. Turn to your neighbor or put it in the comments. Where do you see each of our campuses meeting the unique needs of each of their unique neighbors? Let's dive deep into each one of these groups or neighbors and how Tom Bandy sees the unique needs that each one of them has. And let's start with leadership preferences. The singles and starters gravitate towards a leader who has a vision for social transformation and an ability to mentor people to accomplish that vision. As you can see, they gravitate towards the radical spectrum of leadership. Those who are visionary, who are mentors, who are pilgrims, but they also follow gurus and CEOs. Now, you may wonder, as you look at this chart, what do all of these leaders actually mean? Well, let me walk you through each one according to Tom Bandy. The caregiver leader is very merciful and compassionate, is a strong visitor in homes and institutions, and on call 24/7 for acute intervention and chronic personal support. The enabler facilitates the aspirations of church members and are generally hesitant to impose their own vision, refer to their personal spiritual journey, or critique approved programs. The CEO is a strong organizational skill-based leader with abilities to manage staff, multiply volunteers, and coordinate programs 7 days a week. Those all fall under the traditional category of leadership. In the progressive category of leaders, there's the discipler. The discipler is particularly passionate to multiply disciples and invest great energy to mature Christians and grow leaders. And then there's the guru, a life coach who merges life and work into a seamless, dynamic flow of existence to find a way of living that is clearly countercultural. And then in the radical category, the group that the singles and starters particularly gravitate towards is the visionary. This leader is strategic and a long-term planner, with credibility across public sectors and an ability to see reality, discern truth, target injustice, or proclaim hope. The mentor prefers one-on-one relationships to mature, challenge, and stir holy discontent in order to guide people into a deeper experience of Christ. The pilgrim is very spiritually disciplined, practices rigorous accountability, and encourages sacrifice and simplicity in order to mature Christians through action reflection methods. Now, as you're looking at that whole list of different kinds of leaders, you may wonder, well, what kind of leaders are our pastors? And Tom Bandy has a leadership inventory that each of us has taken, and we filled it out both for ourselves and for, well, each other. So here are the results. When it comes to my leadership style, my colleagues and I all rated me as a visionary and a CEO leader. My lowest ranking was as a caregiver. Mark's highest ranking was as a CEO and a discipler, and his lowest rating was also as a caregiver. Mikkel's highest ranking was a guru and a mentor, and I'll give you one guess what her lowest rating was. That's right, caregiver. Maybe that's why we also have Pastor Tom Fox on as a staff member, who is our care pastor. The good news about our leadership styles is that when you look at all of us, we all have some facet of leadership that will connect with the singles and starters. Now, when we look at the Rooted Flower Power leadership preferences, you see that they prefer leaders who are in established denominations, have, well, credentialing and training, and have that sort of professionalism about them. And you'll see that they also resonate with some of the leadership styles that Mark and Mikkel and I exhibit. The ambitious singles gravitate towards leaders who respect religious diversity, and they will gravitate towards the visionary aspects of my leadership and, to a lesser extent, but still connect with the CEO aspects of my leadership. At Potterville, the Potlucks and Great Outdoors see the pastor as a model for Christian values, as a mentor for spiritual practices, as a constant visitor who provides support in challenging times. As you can see, they'll gravitate towards the caregiver and the enabler, as well as the mentor type leader. But they also have a secondary preference for the discipler. Now, that particular secondary preference is important because that's one of Mark's strengths. But for Mark to be effective here at this campus, he's going to have to be a bit of a missionary outside of his leadership preference. And he has been, because he's been an effective pastor here. Here at the South Lansing campus, the unique neighbors are the growing and expanding neighbors. This group gravitates towards leaders who have a live and let live perspective and have already sacrificed all the sacred cows that exist in religious institutions. Mikkel will be able to connect with them the best with their secondary emphasis on mentorship in leaders. Let's turn our attention to the worship preferences of each of these groups. When we take a look at the singles and starters, you'll see that they much more prefer postmodern forms of worship. They're looking to find spiritual disciplines for meditation, reading, advocacy, and mutual support more than attending a programmatic worship service. And you'll see that they're not interested in traditional worship forms at all. Let's walk through what each of these kinds of worship are, according to Tom Bandy. Caregiving worship leads people to experience the embrace of God as a constant companion, protecting power, and generous benefactor. Educational worship is a teaching service that informs, explains, and advocates doctrines, principles, ethical positions, and church policies to members of the church. A healing worship service is an environment that helps people experience physical, emotional, mental, or relational wholeness. An inspirational worship service is an uplifting experience that gives participants new confidence, courage, and optimism for the future. Transformational worship brings people into direct and immediate experience of the holy in such a powerful way that it dramatically changes or redirects an individual's life. Mission connection worship helps people both experience and participate in the power of God that vindicates people who have been abused, neglected, or persecuted. And coaching worship is a topical service that gives practical advice for effective and fulfilling living. Here at Potterville, the Rooted Flower Power expect the pastor in worship to follow the Christian ear and often the lectionary. You'll see that they like inspirational worship and educational worship, with some secondary preferences in mission connection and coaching worship. Ambitious singles, the unique neighbors around our Eastwood campus, participate in charities and art groups, and they come to worship as if they were coming to a concert or an art gallery. Potlucks and Great Outdoors value continuity with the past in worship.
They prefer caregiving worship or transformational worship, but generally stay in those traditional and modern categories.
Here at South Lansing, the growing and expanding neighbors will gravitate towards worship that is informal and upbeat. You'll see that they like modern worship of inspirational and transformational styles, as well as coaching worship. All right, let's turn our attention to the facility preferences of each of these groups. When it comes to singles and starters, they don't consider any particular facility or technology as sacred. Let's take a look at what each one of these are according to Tom Bandy.
Ecclesial property looks like a church, whereas utilitarian property looks like a normal building. Modern technology is used primarily to enhance print and oral communication, whereas postmodern technology is primarily used to create environments, to intensify sensory experience of sound, sight, touch, taste, and smell, and communicate on several conscious and unconscious levels with very different kinds of people all at once. When it comes to symbolism, classic Christendom symbolism are historical symbols associated with Christianity, whereas contemporary post-Christendom symbols are symbols that have broader spiritual significance. At all of our campuses are the rooted flower power, and Tom Bandy says that while the rooted flower power are rooted in their faith, they may at times have a challenge distinguishing between faith and nostalgia. But you'll see when it comes to property, technology, and symbolism, there's a lot of flexibility in what they will connect with. They're fine with all of it. All right, what about the facility preferences for ambitious singles? Now, when I was reading through Tom Bandy's profile of them, I want you to know that I read this after we made the decision to remodel our Eastwood campus as a performing arts center. But this really knocked me off my chair when I read it. The best worship space for ambitious singles will seem like a dramatic theater in which the stage can be transformed into any environment, or like a science fiction hologram suite that can be digitally shaped into all three dimensions. Wow. Wow. Did we build a worship space for the ambitious singles or not? Here at Potterville, the potlucks and great outdoors, according to Tom Bandy, may not have a great architectural sensibilities, but they do have a strong sense of sacred space. You'll see in the chart that they like their churches to look like churches, and they like classic Christian symbols. But they're also not opposed to utilitarian spaces or modern technology. Here at South Lansing, the growing and expanding neighbors aren't particularly choosy about their kinds of buildings. They can worship in a building that looks like a church or in a building that looks like a normal building. They do tend to like modern technology, and they tend to prefer classic Christian symbolism, but also can connect secondarily with post-Christendom symbolism. In some sense, that's why we've mixed the old and the new together here at South Lansing in our building. All right, we want you to turn to a neighbor or write your answer in the chat to this question. What similarities and differences between each of the five groups' ministry preferences struck you and why? So let's remember why we're doing all this. Why are we asking who is our neighbor? Well, there's several reasons. We want to be curious about who my unique neighbor is and who has God called us to reach. We want to be compassionate to what our neighbor's needs are beyond just the basics of food and shelter. We want to be creative about how we meet my neighbor's needs and how we invite them into the mission of Sycamore Creek. And there's one key assumption throughout this whole series, and that is that we can't reach everyone. I know that's really hard for churches to grasp hold of because we want to, of course, welcome everyone, and we do welcome everyone. But as it's been perhaps made obvious through this series, you're not going to be able to have a building that connects with every single person, or you're not going to be able to have a worship experience that connects with every single person. There's lots of churches, and if we all work together, we will reach everyone. There have been some key verses throughout this series that have been in the background of all of this, and one of them is Jesus' answer to the question, what is the most important commandment? He said it is to love God with everything you've got and love your neighbor as yourself. The prophet Jeremiah, speaking to the Israelites when they were in exile in Babylon, said to them, work for the peace and prosperity of the city where I sent you into exile. How do we work for the peace and prosperity of our neighbors? And Paul, speaking about King David, said, after he had served the purpose of God in his own generation, he died and was laid beside his ancestors. What is God's purpose for you in your generation? Or you could say, who is my neighbor? And how do I meet their needs for the sake of God?